The story of Bartimaeus that we heard in tonight's Gospel reading brings us to the end of a journey through Mark's Gospel. It's not the end of the Gospel, of course, but it's the end of a major section of it. And what happens after this point in the Gospel is that Jesus enters Jerusalem and within a week the people there kill him. But we heard those parts of the story earlier in the year during Lent and Holy Week. There are three more readings from Mark's Gospel to come before we change over to Luke's Gospel at the beginning of Advent, but tonight's was the final episode in a tightly knit section of the Gospel in which Mark seeks to open our eyes to what following Jesus is all about. The story of Bartimaeus wraps up this whole section and summarises it, giving us in Bartimaeus himself the ideal model of a follower of Jesus. This may come as a surprise to you because at first glance, there probably doesn't seem to be that much in it. It's just another story of Jesus healing someone, isn't it? Well, no, it's not. The trouble is, there are at least two things that tend to blind us to what's really going on in it. The first is that many of us have been brought up thinking of these stories as nothing more than historical accounts of amazing things that Jesus did. And therefore, the only theological significance they have is to prove that Jesus could do miraculous things, and therefore he must be God, or at least an agent of God. And the other thing which massively compounds this problem is that we usually hear the individual stories in isolation. And so the links from one story to another don't grab us like they might if we regularly sat down and read several chapters at a time. Now, I know I've spoken about this a couple of times already in the past few weeks, but to bring this story fully to life tonight, I'm going to have to do some recapping again. But seeing as I have done some of it, I try not to overdo it. And I hope that this finale story will make the pieces really fall into place for you and illuminate some more of what it means for you to be a follower of Jesus here and now. This central section of Mark's Gospel, which has run for 2.5 chapters, sets out a vision of what it means to follow Jesus, and it juxtaposes that vision against constant illustration of how difficult it is for anyone to really grasp that vision. The previous section had closed with Jesus looking at his disciples in some exasperation and saying, "Do you still not perceive or understand? Are your hearts hardened? Do you have eyes and fail to see? Do you have ears and fail to hear?" And then this whole section is like a reflection on these words. Do you have eyes and fail to see? And as I've pointed out before, this reflection is framed by two stories of Jesus healing blind men. And you've also heard me say that there are then several series of frames within frames, but tonight we've reached the outermost one again, and so I don't have to go over all the other ones. I can just focus on this outermost one. But I do need to look at both ends of the frame because they are different and the differences are really illuminating. It may surprise you and perhaps help to convince you of the important relationship between the two that these two stories are actually the only two instances of Jesus healing blind people in Mark's account of the Gospel. They are the only two. They come right after Jesus says, "Do you have eyes and yet fail to see?" And they enclose a series of accounts of the disciples failing to see what Jesus is trying to get them to see. And so the first one really rams home the point by showing Jesus having to have more than one go to get the blind man to see properly. There's a conventional structure to miracle stories in the Gospel. And when the Gospel writers are using the stories to make important theological points, the point is usually most apparent in the features of the story that break the conventional pattern, the twists in the tale, if you like. So in the first story, the twist is the need for a second attempt. That's not how Jesus is portrayed anywhere else in the Gospel, and Matthew and Luke were a bit embarrassed about it, so they cut the story out completely. But Mark is trying to make this point with it. Even for Jesus, opening the eyes of those who have eyes but fail to see is a difficult and challenging business that is often unsuccessful, and even when successful, it is only so after repeated attempts. And so indeed the intervening stories illustrate, as we've seen over the past couple of months. Now, I'm not going to recap those intervening stories except where they are alluded to in some way in tonight's final summarising story, because it alludes back to several of them and wraps up their themes. So, for example, tonight we hear that when Bartimaeus was crying out and trying to get Jesus' attention, many sternly ordered him to be quiet. Does that ring any bells? In recent weeks, we have had the disciples sternly silencing an exorcist who was not part of their group and trying to stop children from getting too close to Jesus. I'm going to say something more about that in a few moments. Tonight, we hear that when Jesus calls for Bartimaeus, Bartimaeus throws away his cloak and springs up and comes to Jesus. The cloak is not only probably one of his only possessions, it is what he spreads out in front of him for people to throw coins into as he begs at the roadside. So he has thrown away everything to come to Jesus and follow Jesus. And didn't we just recently hear Jesus say to another man, a man with far, far more possessions, "Give away everything you own and follow me." And that rich young man couldn't bring himself to do it. But Bartimaeus is deliberately contrasted with him as a model disciple. You remember I said a few moments ago that the most important points are often in the twist, in the way the story breaks the conventional pattern of a miracle story. Well, the break in this story is actually bigger than in the first one, because in most respects, this story doesn't follow the conventional pattern of a miracle story, but the conventional pattern of another kind of story, a call to discipleship story. And this cloak that he throws away is actually the first pointer, because when Jesus comes along, Bartimaeus is sitting at the roadside, his usual place for his workplace as a beggar, with his cloak spread out like an office desk in front of him, collecting monies from passers-by. Does it sound at all familiar? Peter, James and John were going about their business too as fishermen when Jesus came along and called them to leave everything behind. But even more similar is Levi the tax collector, who was sitting at his desk in his tax booth collecting money before Jesus came along. And he too leaves everything and follows. And just to reinforce the point that this is more call story than miracle story, Mark uses the word call not once but three times in rapid succession. He says, "Jesus said, 'Call him here,' and they called the blind man and said to him, 'Take heart, get up, he is calling you. He's calling you and calling you and calling you.'" And then when Bartimaeus responds to the call and comes to Jesus, what does Jesus say to him? He says to him, "What do you want me to do for you?" Do you remember that question? It was just last week. James and John said to Jesus, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." And Jesus said to them, "What do you want me to do for you?" So Mark is setting up another contrast. What did James and John want? Status, privilege, the places of honour at Jesus' right and left hand in glory. Do they still not perceive and understand? Do they still have eyes and yet fail to see? But who does perceive and understand? The blind man. "What do you want me to do for you?" "My teacher, let me see again." Not places of glory, he just wants to see. To see and understand. Do you notice Mark again reinforces the connection between seeing and understanding? Because Bartimaeus does not say, "Healer, let me see again," or "Miracle man, let me see again," or "Ophthalmologist, let me see again." He says, "Teacher, let me see again." It is what Jesus is teaching that we are in danger of remaining blind to. It is what Jesus is teaching that he and his gospel writer are trying to open our eyes to. Much of what it is that Bartimaeus sees is already implicit in these various contrasts. He sees that Jesus is one who will not tolerate anyone being silenced and prevented from meeting and following him. He sees that seeing and understanding are of far more value than places of honour and privilege. He sees that when Jesus is calling, there is no point in clinging to your possessions or to the pastimes or practices of your previous life. You can freely give up everything and joyously follow. And to further reinforce just how much Bartimaeus sees and understands, look at who he says Jesus is. Remember that one of the first stories in this section had Jesus asking the disciples, "Who do you say that I am?" And Peter was able to give a very good answer and then immediately demonstrate that he didn't actually understand what the answer meant. So who does Bartimaeus say that Jesus is? I'm not making this connection up. Bartimaeus uses more names and titles for Jesus in this story than are found in any other story in the whole of the Gospel. Who do you say that I am? You are Jesus, Jesus of Nazareth, Son of David, Teacher, the Merciful One. And not to mention, by implication, the healer, the sight giver, the illuminator, the liberator, and the leader who I will follow on the way. And from that, the way that from this point on leads directly to suffering and death on the cross, before it proceeds further still to the promised land of resurrection life. Now, there are two easy mistakes for us to fall into in response to this whole section that is being framed and summed up in tonight's reading. Yes, Mark has continually portrayed the disciples as having eyes but unable to see, and as constantly missing the point of everything that Jesus is trying to teach them. So the first wrong response that we could make is to ridicule the disciples and feel terribly superior because we get it so much more than they did. And we'd never be likely to fall into rivalries or status seeking or silencing outsiders or discounting children or letting our addictions to money and possessions weigh down our following of Jesus. Okay, we might not be that deluded. But there's a second wrong response that's probably more likely, and that is to correctly identify ourselves with the fumbling errors of the first disciples and then beat ourselves up for our stupidity and our failures and to become despairing and despondent. Oh, we'll never be good enough. The harder we try, the more mired in failure we become. You know why this whole section is framed by two miracle stories? It's not just that opening our eyes is the point. It is also that opening our eyes takes a miracle. A miracle that only Jesus can do. And even then, a miracle that is so difficult that he might have to try repeatedly before we really begin to see properly. Neither of these blind men got to see by trying harder and grasping the astonishing truth of the grace of God made known in Jesus is not something that any of us are going to get by wrinkling up our brows and thinking really hard about it. Coming to see who Jesus is and what his life means about who God is and what all that means for who we are and how we are called to live is nothing but a miracle, a divine gift, an astonishing work of God in Christ. And even when Jesus approaches and we want to reach out and receive the gift that he offers, there are forces arrayed against us, aren't there? When Bartimaeus called out to Jesus for help, the people around him sternly ordered him to be quiet. And you too will frequently come up against the unconscious conspiracy to silence your cries for help, for mercy, for the grace to see what is really going on and be free. because there are a lot of people who can't bear to see someone else suggest that this is not all there is and that there might be something more if we just reach out for help. Many of you know that the kind of patronising pity or the sneering condescension or the intellectual ridicule that are often used to silence us lest we admit that all is not well with the delusional reality soap opera that masquerades as the best that life has to offer. So don't worry if you don't fully get it yet, if you can't wrap your mind around all that it is that Jesus is on about. Don't worry, but don't give up either. Don't let the cynics and naysayers and illusion dealers silence you and embarrass you out of calling out to Jesus for help. Jesus is coming and he will not turn anyone away, nor will he prevent anyone from coming. In fact, the minute he hears your voice, he will be calling for you. If you have the humility and courage to ask for it and receive it as a gift, you will see, because Jesus will open your eyes. And when he opens your eyes, you will see that nothing else is worth a fig, and you'll follow him freely and joyously on the way.